Go ahead and call our meeting to order. Good morning, everyone. And with that, if Sheriff Daniels would lead us in the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Why don't we go ahead and make sure we have who all we have on?
Yeah, we can do that. The only one we know for certain is not going to attend today is Matt Medina, and he was unable to attend. We have six board members in the room, but I'll just do a quick roll call.
Would you?
Mr. Ehler?
Mr. Ehler, can you hear us? Mr. Ehler, can you hear us?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Captain Bischoff is in the room. Sheriff Daniels is in the room. Ms. Kelly, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Chief Kelly is in the room. Mr. Lefevre, can you hear us? You show him on, Dan?
No, Andy's not on.
Okay. Andy's not on. Sheriff Masher's in the room. Deputy Director Hunter, can you hear us?
I'm here.
Good morning.
Morning.
Deputy Pittman is in the room. Chief Rodbell is in the room. Miss Weiss, can you hear us?
I can hear you, excuse me.
Good morning. Director Shin, can you hear us? Director Shin or Deputy Director Profiri, are either one of you on and can you hear us? Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum. We'll
okay.
Just see if those other two, because Mr. Lefevre and Director Shin both confirmed their attendance.
Great.
But we'll just wait to see if they come on. But regardless, we have a quorum.
Okay. And then we'll just go ahead and move along then. Mr. Giordano, if you'd like to get into next on the agenda, please.
Absolutely. I'll go right into my introductions. Just a couple housekeeping issues. Assistant Attorney General Ann Froge will be acting as your independent advisor today for our final action cases. She's not in attendance, but she is virtually in attendance. Ms. Froge, are you here? Just want to confirm.
Yes, I am.
Good morning. Thank you.
I think they had me muted.
Nope. Thank you for being here. Appreciate it. A couple other announcements. Kip Rustenberg is in the room today, has announced her official retirement effective June 29th. Kip has been an amazing addition to our staff. She can't wipe the smile off her face since she came to the ultimate conclusion. But, yeah, anyone who knows Kip knows she has a multitude of interests outside of law enforcement in her personal life, in her garden, in all things she does. So she's looking forward to retiring, being a full-time grandmother, and enjoying life. So I just want to wish her the best in all of her future endeavors. Again, I've worked with her now in two different places, and it's been my privilege. So thank you, Kip.
Congratulations. And you look way too young to be a grandma. But
and then to follow up on that, to replace Kip or to take Kip's place because no one can replace her, we are promoting Amanda Faust. Although Amanda is new to the Arizona Post family, she brings a wealth of experience. She's a retired lieutenant from the Phoenix Police Department. She'll be overseeing our training component. She's already been working on our job task analysis, so she'll be bringing that with her. And again, I'm excited for her and the momentum she'll bring to the office. So again, she's here. She's watching virtually. We're keeping the numbers low. We didn't want to bring everybody in. But again, I just wanted to let you know that we are making that change. A couple other things. We're going to take something out of order, Chairman, if it's okay with you. We're going to, again, like we did last month, we're going to move our petitions right after I'm done so we can get those people who are here virtually, we can get them through the process and then off the line so they don't have to stand by for a couple of our presentations, including the rules as well as the budget. There's also one last-minute addition. It's kind of funny. We have a train. One of the officers on the training deficiency list for your consent agenda, Wayne Amos from White Mountain. We can remove him. He called us yesterday, realizing he was on the agenda. He worked tirelessly yesterday to accomplish that, and he confirmed this morning. We were able to confirm this morning that he does meet his training requirements, and he can be removed from that consent agenda. If I remember correctly, he's the last person on the list.
Okay.
And with that, sir, if you have no objections, I can move right into my executive director's report.
Yes, please.
I'm going to keep this brief because we do have quite a bit to talk about today, but just a couple updates. As everyone knows, the Law Enforcement Summit in Flagstaff has been canceled this year, so therefore we're canceling our traditional board meeting that we host up there. We're still trying to work out the logistics of possibly holding a Arizona Post board meeting in July, and I'm just waiting for some further feedback on confirming a date and whether we really truly will have enough work to make it worthwhile to host a meeting. Oftentimes, as you know, our meetings in Flagstaff are kept to a minimum just for the travel. Some of the attorneys don't want to travel, so we keep those to a minimum. So it more than likely would not be too overwhelming in August if we skip the July meeting. But again, I'm still working through the small minutia, and I'll let the board know in the near future whether we're going to do that or not. Sorry. Yes, sir.
Just one question. Now, just because I'm part of the board, the ACOP board, it hasn't been canceled. It's been abbreviated. So it's chiefs only, executives only.
Correct, sir. My mistake.
Just so if there's other chiefs that might be listening, that they all decide not to show up. So anyway.
No, you're exactly right. And I apologize. I misspoke. It's been greatly reduced to really one day of activity for chiefs only. So that was kind of the impetus for the reason for canceling the board meeting. We did cancel our block of training with Dr. Miller that we had scheduled for Thursday morning. Luckily, she had not incurred any expenses yet, so there was no financial loss to Arizona Post based on that cancellation. We were very excited to host her, so we'll be looking for an opportunity in the future to bring her to the Valley and then host a training hosted by Arizona Post. We're still working through the process to replace the ALP program. It's COVID kind of put us behind the eight ball on that, but we do have one proposal currently submitted, and we're still waiting on a second proposal from Arizona State University on what that will look like moving forward. I continue to be hopeful that we'll be able to identify the program we're using and at least begin the class in this calendar year. Because again, as I travel around the state, that's a much discussed topic, and it's a much needed topic to help build future law enforcement leaders here in the state of Arizona. And the only other thing I want to update you is on, we had started working on our job task analysis, meeting with our subject matter expert committees with the ultimate goal of updating our 585-hour basic academy curriculum. Again, COVID-19 had put a stop to that because we could no longer have in-person meetings, which I firmly believe need to take place to have people in the same room having those discussions. We have started those up again. We're still using social distancing. We're still being very careful, but we're engaging those conversations again. So, again, as we work through the job task analysis, I'm hoping by this time next year we'll have that significantly accomplished, and then we'll be making significant changes to the 585-hour basic academy curriculum, which are, in my opinion, are long overdue. And with that, that ends my executive director's report. I'm happy to answer any questions anyone might have.
Okay, why don't we move into the proposed rules changes?
If we could, sir, please. If you're agreeable, can we move those petitions up
and
start
with
the petitions? So we would start with item G,
okay.
And then we'll, after we get through item J, then we'll go back.
You got
and
it.
Cover the budget and then the rules, or the rules and the budget.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
This is Andy. I'm sorry. I apologize. I didn't have the meeting invite, but I am here now for the record.
Thank you, Andy. Good morning. Okay, Mr. Brachtel, did you want to move?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Good morning. Mark Brachtel on behalf of the state of Arizona. The first petition is a petition submitted by the Douglas Police Department. During the hiring process, an applicant said he smoked marijuana one time in 2018. The applicant is Jesus Villa. Smoking one time in 2018 is within the three-year time period, which is a minimum qualification to apply under our board rules. As such, The Douglas Police Department has submitted a petition asking for a waiver of this minimum qualification under Rule 103G. A representative from the Douglas Police Department is present remotely, and I believe would like to address his petition letter. Copy of the petition letter is in the board packet.
Okay. Yes, please. Who would like to do that? Do the presentation.
I believe he's remotely, sir. He should be available.
Chief Fullen, are you on?
Good morning. Yes, I am.
Yes, sir. Would you like to address the board with your waiver request?
Yes. Good morning. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to address you and for your consideration on my request. You have received Mr. Villa's background audit along with my petition asking you to consider a waiver for appointment. Aside from the experimentation issue, he has no other negative finding in his background. The issue at hand is the time frame for experimentation falling within the 3 years prior to approval for appointment, which I further attribute to his youth. This information was voluntarily disclosed by Mr. Villa, and his credibility regarding his drug history was examined through the use of a polygraph, which demonstrated that he was honest and truthful. I believe that Mr. Villa will make an exemplary officer for the Douglas Police Department, and hope that you will agree that he is deserving of this opportunity now rather than a year from now.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Yes, sir.
I have a question. Thank you, Chief. My question is just for purposes of record. This would qualify under the rules changes that we are proposing. Is that correct?
That is 100% correct, sir. Okay,
thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Brackel, anything else?
Nothing further, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. With that, I would ask for a motion.
Sheriff Mark Allen, I make a motion to accept the certification of waiver.
Chief Rodbell will second.
I have a motion and a second. Any other discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? And the motion carries. We will move on to the next petition. Mr. Brackel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This petition is also submitted by the Douglas Police Department. It is on behalf of candidate Trujillo. In your board communication is a copy of my board communication, which is somewhat detailed. I recommend that the board complete a two-part analysis, and I will talk about what I think is the more serious of the analysis first. A little bit of background. During the hiring process, Mr. Trujillo disclosed that once he turned 21 years of age, that he consumed hashish twice and mushrooms twice. Those are categorized as dangerous drugs under our statutes. Mr. Trujillo also disclosed that he had huffed compressed air cleaner. However, that issue we believe is not before the board because we do not know what the ingredients of the air cleaner are. Could have been something that is not a dangerous drug, or could have been contained ingredients. Nonetheless, post staff did not want to surmise to the board on that. So what is in front of the board are a consumption of dangerous drugs four times since he was 21 years of age. By the board rules, a candidate is disqualified for more than one consumption of a dangerous drug, absent a waiver. Douglas Police Department is submitting a waiver under 105C. An issue to bring up to the board, just to bring to the board's attention, is how Douglas Police Department verified the information from the candidate. In the petition letter, it's pointed out that the candidate did not pass a polygraph twice. One of the factors for the board to consider in its rules and whether to grant a waiver is how the agency verified the accuracy of the information. And therefore, with that being said, I believe that the Douglas Police Department chief is ready to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Backfield. Chief, sir, would you like to comment?
Yes, thank you once again. Admittedly, Mr. Trujillo does not present as the ideal candidate. I understand that there are questions and concerns with regards to his background. With respect to the polygraph, I am reminded that the polygraph serves as a tool to help us evaluate the candidate's suitability for the position. We are aware of his experimentation with narcotics due to his disclosure. The information was not gleaned independently and would not have been, as there was no record of arrest or contact with law enforcement that we found. His disclosures did remain consistent between both polygraph examinations, which were 4 months apart. His performance did as well, unfortunately, not passing either polygraph. This would have been the end of the process for the majority of our candidates, and initially it was for him as well. What is different for Mr. Trujillo is we have the benefit of him being internal to the organization. We have direct accounting of his performance for the past 8 years, and an eye to any deficiencies or problems. We also have the benefit of interaction with him. Since we are a small community, officers and medics respond to a lot of the same calls. He has also served as TIMS, Tactical Emergency Medical, for our special response team since 2015. Mr. Trujillo is a dedicated military veteran, having served combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, and is the recipient of 2 Purple Hearts. He has led a respectful and law-abiding life from his time in service to the present. He has been exposed to traumas in his service to our nation and in his service to our community and has endured. He is deliberate and dedicated, and if given the opportunity, will prove to be a valuable asset to our department and our community. I have been given a number of opportunities throughout my career because someone believed in me or saw the value that I brought to the table. We've also seen where a candidate is passed over for one reason or another in our process, only to succeed in being hired on with another agency and continue a successful career. With that, I'm looking forward to pay it forward to Mr. Trujillo and respect his service to our country and give him an opportunity that he may not otherwise receive. Again, I thank you for the opportunity to address you and for your consideration.
Thank you. Any questions for the chief?
Do we know the age of Mr. Trujillo?
34.
Thank you. Any other questions? Mr. Brackel, anything else?
There's the second part of the analysis involving the sale of marijuana one time, if you'd like me to address that, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly.
Thank you. So the candidate also disclosed that he sold marijuana one time as a child in high school, and that is in violation of post rules. That is in your board communication. The board should determine if this candidate's actions as a child constitutes juvenile indiscretion under Rule 105D.
Okay. Yes.
So, again, for the record, because there's so many variables in this one, we just adjusted the post rules or requesting a change in post rules. How does this fit into that? Are there still restrictions in this document that we have not approved? So this is truly a waiver.
Yes, sir. Yes, Chief. It would be.
Thank you. Sure, Matt here, yes. Chief Rodbell, if I could. Yes, to your point, sir, this circumstance, the fact-based pattern that we've been given in this, would still be in violation of the rules this board agreed to push forward through the process last month or 2 months ago. So, yeah, this would still require a waiver even if the rules that we have proposed become statute. This would still be in violation of those. That's correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Having none, may I have a motion?
I'll
is Lisa White.
Hello.
Hi, it's Lisa White.
Hello. Go right ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Bechtel, could you tell me, is there any way to make it work within the road structure as opposed to not make it work?
You were a little warbled for me. Could you repeat or somebody summarize?
I said, is there any way to make this work as opposed to not making it work as a waiver?
The board has the authority and the discretion to apply its rules as it sees fit. The state's concern, though, is on the question of veracity. How has Douglas Police Department, the petitioner, satisfied the board that his information that he provided is accurate?
Does that answer your question, Lisa?
I think so. I guess I would turn to the chief then and ask him if they would be here. What does he think about the veracity of this potential officer?
Chief, would you like to answer that?
Yes, sorry, I had to unmute my mic. In terms of confirmation, really I'm relying on Mr. Trujillo's work history within our community. The last 8 years serving with the Douglas Fire Department in the capacity of a paramedic. I don't know that he would be able to continue in that capacity and service if there was still an ongoing issue. He has had a subsequent cut screen as part of the overall process, which was passed without issue.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else? Somebody needs to mute. Anything else? If not, may I have a motion, please?
Chair Markdowns, I'll make the motion. I make the motion, and I want to caveat this with the lack of confirmation. I do agree with that, to include the polygraph, which didn't support the integrity on this. So my motion would be denied a waiver.
Chief Rago will second.
I have a motion and a second for denial. Is there any other discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And the motion carries. Chief, thanks for being here, sir. And we're going to move on to aye. Mr. Brackle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This petition is submitted by the Hualapai Nation Police Department. During the hiring process, Mr. Atherton disclosed he smoked marijuana one time in 2018. Very similar fact pattern to your first petition today. Post Rule 810 prohibits use of marijuana for any purpose within the past 3 years. The police department has submitted this waiver. If the board is to grant it, this candidate, Mr. Atherton, would be 9 months shy of that three-year mark. I believe there's a representative from the police agency, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Brachtel. Is there a representative here from the Hualapai Nation like to speak on this issue? Any representation?
Chief Smith, are you on with us? Mr. Chairman, I'm being told he confirmed the meeting invite, but he's not. We don't show him on the call. There are some private callers that called in. We can't identify all the phone numbers, but as of right now, he's not responding.
Okay. Okay, did you go ahead?
I have a question. So, again, for purposes of record, would this activity qualify under our rules changes that we've suggested?
Yes, it would, Chief Rabo.
Okay, thank you.
Question. Any other? I think we're just going to move ahead with that question. Any other questions or comments? Having none, may I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, based upon the information submitted by the Nation, pursuant to Rule 13-4-103G, I move that the Board grant the request for a waiver.
First, Pittman, second. I have a motion and a second for approval. Is there any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all very much. We're going to move down to Jay, Mr. Brackett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This petition is submitted by Arizona Department of Public Safety. During the hiring process, Mr. Dolan.
Keep going.
During the hiring process, Mr. Dolan Smith disclosed he consumed a testosterone booster without a prescription. It is cypionate, which is a dangerous drug. The issue before the board is that he consumed a dangerous drug within the last 7 years. He disclosed in his hiring that he consumed it in 2014. That is a disqualifier. By the board's rules, the question is whether or not to grant a waiver under Rule 103G. I believe there is a representative from the agency.
Thank you, Mr. Brackle. Is there a representative from the Arizona Department of Public Safety?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, honorable members of the board. Thank you for the opportunity to present Arizona Department of Public Safety's request waiver for Dalen Smith. My name is Damon Cecil. I'm major with the Arizona Department of Public Safety and the commander of the Human Resources Bureau. Dan, we're talking about also, Mr. Brackfield, one of the things I wanted to add is that it's not just the time, but it's also the number of uses after the age of 21. This was four separate injections that happened in about April 2014, so the time is an issue under a year before he'll hit that seven-year mark for a dangerous drug. But also he used four times, and he was age 21 at the time that occurred, which is also an issue in our waiver. A background investigation and a polygraph examination were both administered to Mr. Smith, which he successfully completed. Some significant areas I want to touch on with Mr. Smith's background include his consistent work history, all the positive references from past employers. Mr. Smith moved forward after this incident and graduated from Brigham Young University with a degree in business management and finance. He also conducted a church mission to Latin America and is fluent in Spanish. Since this incident, he has been married, and the only other negative issue in his background were five marijuana usages as a juvenile, which were within post-guideline and therefore not an issue for this waiver. Again, Mr. Smith has demonstrated maturity and growth through his graduation from college, his completion of his church mission, and marriage, and the consistent positive work history which he has attained since this incident had occurred. And it's based on these factors that we at the Arizona Department of Public Safety feel that he would be an excellent trooper and public servant. And the Arizona Department of Public Safety requests a waiver for the number of usages after the age of 21 and the recentness of the use being under 7 years. We do not believe Mr. Smith's conduct was so egregious that public trust in law enforcement profession would be jeopardized if he was certified. And in light of Mr. Smith's overall background and growth and maturity since the steroid usage, we respectfully request the board grant his waiver petition.
Thank you, Major. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman, Paul Ayler, Commander Cecil, what was the reason for the injections back in 2014?
he was using it as a weightlifting supplement to improve weightlifting performance.
Chief Rob Bell, I think you had a question.
So for purposes of record, is this amongst the changes that we're proposing in our rules?
Yes, sir. Chief Rob Bell, to answer your question, you are correct. The rules that have been proposed, the changes to the rules that have been proposed, this would fall within those, and a waiver would not have been required.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, this is Jim Hunter. Just for the record, I'm recusing myself.
Okay, thank you. And may I have a motion, please?
Sure, Chris Pittman. I'll make the motion that we grant the petition for certification.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
A second. Don Bischoff.
Motion and a second. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
No.
Opposed? And the motion carries. Major, thank you very much, sir. And we're going to move on now, going back to the proposed rules changed. Director Giordano.
All right, Mr. Chairman, that's all me. This might take a little while. We did include in your board packet the proposed rule changes. I just want to thank a few people. As you can tell, this is a very long process, a very tedious process. And although everyone here at Arizona Post participated, there's a few people I'd like to recognize specifically. First and foremost, Kip Rustenberg has been our one point of contact with Jeannie Hahn, who is our consultant through this process. In addition, working very closely with Kip, Mark Brachtel, Marie Dreyer, and Steve Jacobs have gone over every line of this and provided input. So again, it's a collaboration of efforts here, but those people specifically have been heavily involved in the process. So without further, I'll just start going through, and if you're okay with it, I'll go through each page. Kip went through, and although you'll see underlining, you'll see strike-throughs, it's very difficult to read. That's the process we have to use. That's the format that is required from the process. However, Kip went through, and for each time we made a change or were requesting a change, she highlighted it in blue. So, and then it has a little description of what we were changing. So if you want to follow along with me in your packets, I will go through each page. We'll do it as quickly as we can, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have. If for some reason I'm unable to answer that, Jeannie Hahn, our consultant, is on the phone, standing by to back me up should I need her assistance. So without further, your first couple pages are just something we submit. It's called a Notice of Proposed Rulemaking. It just kind of gives an overview of the things we're requesting to be changed. So as you continue through, the first blue change, the first description you're going to see is under the definition section. All we're doing is adding Adderall as a definition, and we're just making sure we're explaining what's in it, that's a stimulant, and it should not be not limit the intended use. Again, it's just nothing more than the definition of Adderall to clear that up because it hadn't been there previously. You look at the next one, which is on page 7. This is where we just remove the word experimentation and the definition of experimentation because based on the drug standard rule changes, experimentation is going to be removed because it no longer will apply to the proposed rules that we're pushing forward reference drugs. If you go to the top of page 8, this is just resolve in the future. As you know, the board has had the ability to take that action, consider a case, resolve in the future. However, it was never defined in our board packet or in our rules. We wanted to make sure that was clearly defined moving forward in the process. And then also, if you see there, we're requiring background investigators to query whether an applicant has ever had a board action indicating resolve in the future. That was never in there before previously. If you go to page 9, there's just a formatting change. You're going to see a lot of formatting changes and grammatical changes that I don't think anyone will have any concerns with. If you go to page 10, the first one is some grammatical changes as well as adding homeschooling. As you know, one of our minimum requirements is possession of a high school diploma. Well, obviously, the advent of homeschooling has become much more important. We want to make sure we're not excluding people who are homeschooled or having them have to come before the board and ask for a waiver. So we just thought we'd put that in there because, again, it's just as regulated as going to an actual in-person school. The next one on that same page is, and this was actually a mistake we're fixing from the rule changes in 2016. In 2016, the word background investigation was inadvertently added by throughout the process, and it wasn't caught when it was finally approved. And basically what this will do and what this rule change in 2016 allowed, it allowed people to enter an academy prior to their background investigation being completed. So as the board has shown frustration, and we share your frustration, when you're hearing cases about someone's new hire audit and they're already 6 or 7 or 8 weeks in the academy, which is unfair to them, it's unfair to the organization, I think quite fairly it's unfair to Arizona Post. So we're going back. We're going back to saying no longer can someone start the academy until their background investigation is complete and been audited by Arizona Post. Because, again, I just didn't think it was fair to the groups I mentioned previously. Going on to page 11, again, this is where you start getting into your drug standards. And, again, I think we're all clear on the drug standards, what we changed. But just to give you an idea, we're changing marijuana use from 3 years to 2. We're eliminating experimentation, and we just some formatting that our consultant recommended as the way things, the way the rule was worded. Same with on that same page.
Mr. Chairman, this is Andy. Can I ask Matt a quick question?
Yes.
So, Matt, I just want to make sure I'm clear, because the last case that we just granted a waiver for, you said that that would fall within the existing rules of not having used something within the past 7 years. But it looks like the person utilized the stuff in April of 2014 is when it started. So would that not have fallen within 7 years?
Because, and Andy, and you're correct. On our old rules, steroids were lumped into dangerous drugs. However, based on our conversation, the direction the board gave us several months ago, we created steroids as their own category. So in that case you're referring to for the DPS trooper, his use of steroids would fall in the steroid category that we're proposing, and then it wouldn't be a 7 year window any further.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And again, at the bottom of page 11, again, just formatting that was recommended by the consultant. Going to page 12, you just start getting into the marijuana rule changes and just some highlights. We have now adding all forms of marijuana are treated the same. So marijuana is marijuana is marijuana, no matter how you ingested it. We're eliminating experimentation, eliminating a number of uses, and then we're changing the time frame from 3 years to 2 years. And then we did keep in at your recommendation that never illegally possessed or used while someone was a peace officer, regardless of time frame. Going on to page 13 in the middle, we start getting into our dangerous drugs, hallucinogens, and narcotics. Again, at your recommendation, we kept the 7 year time limit. We kept no more, we really didn't make any changes. These are some formatting issues, but we kept no more than 5 times listed, and we kept no more than 1 time since the age of 21. At the bottom of that is where, to Andy's point, we added the steroid section. We carved that out, made it its own section. And again, we're adding a time frame of use within 3 years prior to appointment, and never illegally possessed or used once they were a peace officer.
Quick question on that.
Yes, sir.
Matt, if I could. Kept, never illegally possessed. Does that also mean illegally used, or would legal use fall into that?
Are you talking about the steroid section, sir?
No, this marijuana part down here.
Oh, going back.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
On page 12?
Yeah, on 12. I read that and never kept it illegally, which I understand, or used. Would that be illegally used? If he's in a state where it's legal, does that matter?
No, it doesn't matter. That's why, and we were very careful with our word choices there
on
not putting illegally used, because, again, you could argue that if I used it in a state where recreational marijuana is legal, it wasn't illegal.
Okay.
Now, technically, if you really want to get technical, it's still illegal by federal law.
Right.
But again, we wanted to be very clear that you could never have used it as a peace officer, regardless of where you used it.
Thank you. That answered my question.
Going on to page 14, again, this is where we, again, carved out a section for Adderall use. We excluded physician-prescribed usage. We added definitions to clarify. Again, Adderall is a drug, brand-name drug, but there's other drugs in very similar compositions that we wanted to make sure we included, because we didn't believe the board wanted us to exclude everything besides Adderall. Again, all uses are the same, regardless if we get when the board was clear they want us to take out athletic performance, studying, they just a use was a use regardless of why it was used. And then we put in the time frame of 3 years prior to appointment, and then again never as a peace officer. In the middle, you talk formatting change, we're adding CBD. That was one of the substantive policies the board approved several years ago, and we just wanted to capture it in actual policy, in our statute. Again, at the bottom, just removing the word experimentation. Going to page 15, there's just some verbiage clarification. Again, that was a recommendation by our consultant. Going to page 17, this is just a clarification of discharge military discharge paperwork, and we're just adding some clarification on that, on what forms are acceptable to for that area. Going to page 18, this gets into our request for resolve in the future, and this again requires the query. AG is requiring them to query for any kind of potential board action, previous board actions that had the designation of RF. And yep, that's good there. Going down below, again, it's just a formatting clarification. We're adding RF board cases to administration of policy, just again, just clarifying those. Even though they've been in there, we want to make sure it was very clear. On page 19, it's adding verbiage to ensure all investigations are complete. Oftentimes, we get investigations that just aren't complete when we get those, the background investigation. This is just saying that if there is missing information, they have to justify why the information is missing, whether it's a reference that didn't get back to them, whatever it might be. We're just asking the agencies, just document for us if there's something missing in the background investigation, why is it missing? And again, we want to be reasonable, but we also want to be justified in our decision-making, and that we think that will help us do that. Page 20, again, just adding verbiage to include the RF designations. Middle of the page, we added this to ensure agencies comply with making records available. We do have occasions where someone will be lateraling from one agency to another, or someone's applied for a different agency and now is applying for a third agency or a second agency, and the sharing of information between agencies sometimes, and not often, but every once in a while, we'll have issues where some agencies don't want to release information, and we're just putting in the rule that you need to work with, you need to release that information so that other agency can make a true hiring decision based on the totality of the facts. Again, the top of page 21, again, just changing some verbiage related to disqualifiers for drug rules. On page 22, we changed the verbiage. As you know, and I've talked about before, we have gone online for our comprehensive final exam. We haven't hit all 14 academies, but we've hit a good chunk of them. It's gone incredibly well. We used to do a paper and pencil with a number 2 Scantron form. We're now doing it all online. We've done it all over the state, but they haven't hit all of them yet. But it's been very successful. We get incredible feedback. There's been a couple technology issues with bandwidth, but we're working through that now with the different academies. But it's instant feedback. It's a technology platform that most of our younger recruits are familiar with. And it cuts down, Lori Waite joked that it took away 90% of the workload for our staff. This is also going to allow us to do it remotely. So no longer will someone have to drive to Douglas to issue the comprehensive final exam. We will set it up in the system through our third-party provider. We will allow RTOs and class sergeants the ability, and we'll give them the training to administer the test themselves. We don't go down and watch people shoot. We don't go down and watch people drive. We trust the academies that they're holding people to the standards, and this is just an evolution of that. We'll now allow them to do that. Again, there's oftentimes we have multiple academies graduating in the same week, and we've had to shuffle people around. We've had to tell academies, hey, we can't do it on Wednesday. How about Thursday? This will give the academies the ability to schedule the comprehensive final exam on their terms, on their times, without diminishing the productive, without compromising the test at all. So we're very excited about it. It's new for us. It's a drastic change, but again, it's one. Again, it's reasonable, and it increases our efficiencies. So that's all we're doing is putting it into the rules. Going on to page 24, we're updating the waiver process. For those of you who know, when you come into the state of Arizona and you want to waiver into the process, historically we've said, well, did you work? When have you worked? How many years have you worked in the last 3 years? And we would then piecemeal out the waiver process. You have to take two sections. You have to take the whole test. we're going to eliminate that. We are just going to go back to a full waiver test. So people coming in from out of state will take pretty much the same test that we're issuing as a comprehensive final exam at the end of the academy. And I think that's important. I think we need to make sure, because again, policing in a different state might not translate 100% to Arizona. So why not just make those people take the entire comprehensive final exam? And just to go back, we are also working on making this fully electronic as well. It's being built right now in our third-party provider. And again, we will be able to then train our background investigators and staff from around the state. They'll be able to issue that test in their own office with their potential waiver applicants. Again, too often we have the test here once a month, and people stay at hotels. They drive up from Yuma. They drive down from the Navajo Nation, and it's just not an efficient use of people's time. We've had people have to stay over it at night so they can be here in the morning to take it. Why not allow the agencies to issue that test themselves? We'll still have oversight over it. We'll be able to collect the records, but we're giving a little bit more of that discretion back to the agencies to issue those tests themselves. Again, we just look to be reasonable and increase efficiencies, and I think this is a big win for us. I think it's a big win for statewide law enforcement who are hiring people from out of state. Going to page 25, again, this is some formatting clarifications, but the second item you see is currently our continuing training. When we have someone come in to provide continuing training for our officers, as you all know, we have to do 8 hours a year. When someone provides us, hey, I would like to qualify get my training certified for continuing training hours, we've always looked at that training and said, okay, how do we tie it back to the 585-hour basic curriculum? And oftentimes we have to get a little creative on which learning objectives we put that into, which lesson plan we put that into. What we're asking the board to consider is allow us to look at that holistically and say, is this related to law enforcement? Is it related to what a basic peace officer should know or should improve their skills upon? Again, just trying to be more reasonable and not tie our hands by saying, hey, we can't find anywhere in the 585 curriculum where this fits, but it's still important. It's still something that peace officers should know, and we want to point at the authority to be able to issue continuing training credits for these types of classes. Going to the bottom of page 26, this is just clarifying some agency requirements when hosting outside vendor training. Again, it's kind of in the same vein that we just discussed. And it just talks about documentation for agency reference future training audits. Going to page 27, again, just clarifying some acceptable supervisory positions. As you look, if you look at the actual rule itself, it did say they use the term supervisory position. Well, every agency is a little bit different. So we want to just say, hey, sergeant and higher, make it very clear. If you're a sergeant or higher, this rule applies to you. Continuing on, and bear with me, I think we're getting near the end. If you go to page 30 in the middle, we just eliminate the verbiage of community college or teaching certificate because it's no longer applicable. Years ago when I got my master's degree, I went down, I was so proud, I got my community college teaching certificate, and that's what this required. Those no longer exist. The Department of Education doesn't issue those anymore, so we're just removing that from the rules.
Can I ask another question?
Yes, sir.
And it goes back to page 27 in proficiency. And I kind of, we discussed the de-escalation type of training.
Yes, sir.
Where did that fit in proficiency, or did it? Where was that when we discussed that?
As you know, de-escalation, and I've used this, I've talked to several people about this, de-escalation, if you look at our 585-hour curriculum,
right,
you will not find the term de-escalation anywhere in that. It's a fairly new term in police vernacular. However, the concept isn't new. So you will find that in all of our continuing training. You'll find it all in our academy training, and it's demonstrated through scenario-based training.
And is it titled de-escalation in that training?
It is not. Okay. Not in our 585. I can tell you, as we're going through the job task analysis, we're identifying where the principles of de-escalation are taught.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, when we do finally update the 585 hours, although the concepts are already there, you will see titles de-escalation.
Okay.
So we're very clear, because again, I think the casual observer looks at our 585 Act curriculum and says, well, there's no de-escalation there. That's incorrect. There is de-escalation in
there.
It's just not termed
right.
De-escalation. So
should we have that in here, though?
I don't think it's necessary to put
okay.
it into the rule itself.
Okay.
The 585 is captured in there, and we will meld it into that, but I don't think it's necessary to actually incorporate that term into the rules. Now, we can explore that if you would like, but I don't think it's necessary.
Well, it was just a question. You know, it does come up. As you said, we hear it all the time. It's just not listed, and it is fairly a new term that I don't think is going to go away.
Correct.
So I thought it should at least be mentioned somewhere.
And to your point, I next year when the job task analysis is done and we have revamped, and we call it the 585, but I think it'll be different. I think the numbers will be different next year. We will be coming back through this process to update that, and I think at that time you will see de-escalation in the 585 that will ask you to approve, hopefully about this time next year.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Matt, what's the downside of putting that language in the rule?
Paul, is that you?
Yes, Paul Ehler, I'm sorry.
Mr. Ehler, in answer to your question, I don't think there's any damage in doing it. It would just be trying to find the right place to put it, and it might be a little bit disingenuous at this point because we haven't updated the 585. So, again, we could insert it somewhere, but until we truly revamp the 585-hour basic academy curriculum, I just think it would be premature to put it in there at this point.
Question from Chief Rodbell.
So Matt, when you revamp it and you change it, does that require you to go through a rules change again, or you just update this document? How's that work?
Sadly, it does. It'll be a much more compact rules process, but the procedure is very clearly outlined in statute that we would have to go back through this process. But again, since we would only be focusing on the, and again, I'm not going to stop calling it 585 because I think it'll be a different number next year. We'll be very focused on just that portion of the rules.
Okay. Mr. Ehler, does that answer your question as well?
Yes, but I don't see it. I mean, since we're doing the rule changes now, and we believe that's an important point, I would think we would want to just put it in there now.
That would just require direction from the board. Obviously, we will do what the board directs us to do.
I understand what both of you are saying, Director, so far as the cart getting before the horse as having the actual training, yet we're listing it now, unless we can do these simultaneously. As Mr. Ehler said, if we were to put this in, we would have to start the training very soon, I would say, to define it and say what is it and where do you put it in the proficiency. I don't know if you can do that at the same time, or is that worth doing?
Well, if I can ask you to turn to page 34 in your packet, it lists the 585 and then the breakdowns.
Okay. What page did you say?
Page 34 in your handout. And as you look through that, it has all the different functional areas and breaks them down. Again, I would look to your direction on where you think we would put in the term de-escalation in what already exists.
Mr. Chairman, this is Andy.
Yeah, Andy, go ahead.
You know, a way around this may be a communication from the board to the governor and the legislature in our function of highlighting important law enforcement trends, or I forget exactly what our authorizing statute allows us, just, you know, indicating our awareness of the importance of de-escalation training or whatever we want to include in that, and saying that as, you know, the plan is to redo the the training requirements and making sure that that is included in there in a concrete way as we do that next year. And putting something out along those lines may, I think, address the concern that I feel that you guys are trying to raise, which is how do we recognize or acknowledge that this is important, that it's important to the community, and that we will be addressing this in the proper fashion when we get to that point.
Yes. Any other comments? Or Don, you look like you have something.
Yeah. I would say just looking at the a lot of the curriculum, we have areas that cover mental illness, cultural awareness, interpersonal communications, to some extent the firearms training. I think, as the director mentioned, a lot of the concepts and the principles of de-escalation are already in the curriculum that we have, although you couldn't thumb through that curriculum and find de-escalation, perhaps, per se. It does exist, and maybe moving forward, I agree, maybe communicating to the legislature, the governor, or a positional statement or whatever is that the concepts and principles already exist in our training. And that in the process of reviewing and refreshing that training, it will maybe be more evident or clearly identified using those terms and these terms and phrases that we're now dealing with. So I think maybe doing it afterwards as part of the curriculum review and renewal, and then maybe with some sort of a position statement being issued to whomever the board feels is necessary. I think a lot of the concepts and principles are already in the training.
They are, and I think our academies tell us that, but I think the term has to come out sooner than later. And I agree with Paul that, you know, somewhere we need to be saying that we're doing it, and it's not. So, but again, you don't want the cart before the horse. So I think if we hold off on it, it's just going to be another rule change, very specific to de-escalation, maybe its own title. But I do think it's important that we put some kind of position out that we're looking at this, that we're making changes, that we're doing things. That would be kind of what I would address to you, Director, is whatever is the best way to move to the future, letting agencies know, letting the public know, letting the governor know, the legislature know that we need to look at some additional training and focus on de-escalation as we move ahead with the rules changes in the future.
Absolutely. We could definitely put out that information.
Thank you. Any other discussions? I know, you know, in today's day and age, there's a lot going on, and the timing is just here now. Go ahead, Chief.
So I've heard nothing I disagree with. It's going to be in the delivery of the message.
Right.
I don't want anybody to think that suddenly we realize, oh, we should be doing de-escalation. We're doing it throughout the curriculum. It's just you're doing it when you deal with interpersonal skills, when you do laws of arrest, when you're doing
defensive tactics.
So I don't want to get the word out that, okay, we're not going to look at this issue, because this issue is inherent, as you said, in everything we're doing. Yeah. So the balance between putting out the message that we're going to be looking at it and the fact that we never looked at it before, there's some danger in that. So that's the balance, because I haven't heard anything we disagree with as a board or quite frankly as a state. And so how you handle that, I guess, is somehow, even if it says, you know, interpersonal skills / de-escalation, you know, laws of arrest, de-escalation, right, mental illness, de-escalation. I mean, we're already doing it, but mm-hmm. I think we need to take credit for what we're doing. If you're going to focus on it as an issue, that's different. But I don't think we focus as an issue. It's always circumstantial in the situation that we're in at the moment. So I want to balance the fact that we're now looking at de-escalation, but it's not something new to us. We've been doing it for years. Makes sense?
I agree with you 100%. Yeah. That's, as you know, I get media inquiries quite often. I get inquiries from elected officials, and that's the response I always give them. We're working through the process to update our curriculum. However, we are already teaching de-escalation techniques. We're already demonstrating them, and we're testing for them through scenario-based training at all of our academies. So I agree with you 100%. We do need to have the word out there, but we have been doing it.
And that's the balance you have to achieve with whatever message you send.
Okay. We will work on that and have something hopefully sooner rather than later that we can push out from the board.
Thank you. Any other discussion on that? Okay, thank you. We'll keep moving.
I want to say we are done with the updates.
Okay.
That covers all of them. So unless anyone has any concerns or issues, what I would ask if the board would make a motion to approve these recommended rule changes and give us the authority to move forward in the process.
All right. This was a lot, and I think we've worked on this for quite a while. Thank you, Kip, and everyone else. This was a lot of work that went into this. Thank the staff for all the hard work. It's a lot of changes. I think everybody's had time on the board to review, look at this. Is there any more discussion or questions on these proposed changes right now before I ask for a motion? Now would be the time. Having none, may I ask for a motion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Andy. I would move that the board adopt the amended administrative rules in Title 13, Chapter 4, as listed in the Notice of Proposed Rulemaking.
Second. Thank you. And I had a second from Chief Kelly. Is there any further discussion on that? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
And then, Mr. Chairman, I believe we need another motion. I would also move that the board proceed with the proposed of amending its rules by filing a notice of proposed rulemaking as adopted by the board with the Office of the Secretary of State.
All right. Are we combining that all into one, or is that two separate? Two separate. Let's go back to the first one then. And we had everybody all in favor. We had anybody opposed on the first motion? Okay, then the first motion passes. Now to the second motion. All those in favor, or any further discussion on the second motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we have passed with the second motion as well. Thank you very much.
My apologies, Mr. Chairman, for moving too quickly.
That's okay, Andy. You came in late, and then you tried to catch up, so appreciate it. All right, we're going to continue on. We got a busy agenda today, and I believe we are going down to budget discussion. Director Giordano.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. In your board packet, you have our proposed budget for fiscal year 21. If you read it closely, you'll notice it looks very, very similar to budget for fiscal year 20. Just a few little changes that I'd like to highlight for you. As I've talked about before, when the state legislature adjourned and did a skinny budget, we lost our appropriated funding. It was considered one-time funding. So we lost just a little over $1 million out of our budget. That is the money we were using to provide reimbursements to academies for successful graduations. Lynn has worked very hard and has been able to just roll it into our CGEF funding that we get every month, and we shouldn't see any reductions in payments to our academies. We had talked and we had made a proposal to increase our level of support to the academies for each recruit. However, based on the loss of that funding, we just don't have the resources to do that at the time being. So if something should change in the future, we would reconsider that. But as of right now, we're going to continue with $2,500 for each recruit that graduates and $900 for each recruit that makes it through 50% of the academy. A couple other things I'd like you to, as you look, we're going to carry a balance of approximately $3 million in fiscal year 21. I know that was a discussion topic last year. Someone asked, you know, what is the right amount to carry? And I can tell you that when you rely almost exclusively on funds that vary from month to month, in my opinion, I like to have as much on hand as possible should something change just like we saw with the COVID-19, we've seen a little bit of a reduction, and we anticipate a further reduction as the year goes on. But if you look at anticipated balance at the end of fiscal year 21 is $1.3 million. So we go from $3 million into this fiscal year, and we're looking at $1.3 million next fiscal year. So, again, having that extra money this year is going to help us as we transition through fiscal year 21. Just a couple things. Obviously, there'll be no raises for employees this year. And then we just remain cautiously optimistic for fiscal year 21, where we know that we'll see a reduction in some of our CJET fundings over the next couple months. But we're hopeful, and give us a few months, and we'll be back up to where we have been in the past and what we budget for. Again, we're still in good financial shape. We've had some budget savings through vacancy savings, and we're still using that money. We're still looking to put on additional programs. Where training is starting to ramp back up again, and that's where we spend the bulk of our money on per diem and hotels and things of that nature. So, again, I think we're in a really good position, and I think we'll continue that good position through fiscal year 21. So with anything else, I'd be happy to answer any questions about the budget you might have.
No questions. Thank you very much for your work on that.
I did a comment.
Oh, you do have one.
No, it's really more of a comment. So I'm guessing that with some of the things that are going on in Washington and in state capitals, there's a lot of conversation about, supporting posts throughout the country and supporting training throughout the country, as well as giving additional responsibility to posts to monitor behaviors of all kinds. So I'm guessing that some of this flexibility in the state budget, that if in fact granting opportunities come forward from the federal government to allow us to do more of what we should be doing, becomes available. There's room here for contingency funds?
Absolutely there is.
Okay. Thank you.
And we've had those discussions, sir, behind the scenes. We're seeing the same thing. We're seeing the same push. And we've started making plans internal on how we would address those should those come to fruition.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else on the budget?
This is Lisa Weiss. I just have one thing to add, Mr. Chair, with regard to the funding going forward, with regard to potential additional training due to current events. I saw an executive order last night from the President with regard to safe policing, and it looks like there's going to be a DOJ discretionary grant that's going to be available for this.
Thank you.
And we will continue to monitor that and apply should it become available to us.
Thank you, ladies. All right, let's move on to the consent agenda. This calls for a motion. I think you've all had a chance to look at that, review it. If
we didn't get a motion for the budget.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry. We'll go back to the budget, and I would ask for a motion on the approval of our budget.
Mr. Chairman, Chris Pittman, I move that the fiscal year 2021 budget be approved.
Chair Gamble, second.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And it carries. Thank you very much. Back to the consent agenda. May I have a motion for approval if there's no questions or discussion?
Chair Downs, I make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all very much. And I believe that catches us up down to the final action cases. Case number 115068, Mr. Brackle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the Bolts matter. Post staff in the state request that the board dismiss the complaint in this matter. It is believed that if brought to a hearing, that the board could not demonstrate by a preponderance of the evidence that respondent committed the conduct as alleged. In your board packet is a copy of the motion. I will briefly summarize a little bit of the background. Maricopa County Sheriff's Office terminated Deputy Bolts in 2015. The termination report indicated that while a detective in 2012, he violated agency policies on the release of property and evidence. The Post analyst presented the case to the board for charging in 2016. And in your copy of your motion, the allegation was that Deputy Bolts violated evidence release policies, which was later discovered during a 2014 audit. During subsequent administrative interviews, Bolts gave conflicting explanations and was found to be untruthful. That was the allegation that was charged and that was initiated on. In 2016, Deputy Bolts and his attorney continued to litigate these issues at the civil service level. And in 2016, Bolts prevailed at civil service and was reinstated with the Sheriff's Department. In October of 2019, an assistant attorney general was assigned to proceed with this case to hearing. That AAG was not me, it was another. He is no longer employed with my office. However, the AAG and the analysts assigned this case conducted trial preparation, and when they did so, they acquired additional information. They re-interviewed witnesses, they obtained copies of civil service transcripts, and they also obtained additional court filings. Based upon their review, their conclusion was that the evidence was insufficient to justify the continuation of the proceedings. I filed this motion on behalf of AZ Post, requesting that the complaint in this matter be dismissed. I do believe that counsel for Deputy Bolts is present remotely if there are questions or comments for her.
Thank you, Mr. Brackle. Any questions, Mr. Brackle?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Chris Pittman, I have to recuse myself.
Okay, let that be noted. And would counsel like to make comments on this case?
This is Catherine Bailey, counsel for Wade Bolts. I agree with Mr. Brackdell, and I am here to answer any questions if there's further questions from the board.
Thank you, ma'am. Any further questions? Having none, may I ask for a motion?
Alan Rodbell, I move to grant the state's motion for reconsideration and dismiss the November 16, 2016 complaint against Mr. Wade Bolts.
Chair Daniel, second.
I have a motion seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. And we'll move on to the next case, number 19-002. Mr. Brackdell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the Scotty Cayley matter. In front of you is a motion for reconsideration to dismiss this complaint. The state and post staff request that the board dismiss the complaint in this matter. Post staff does not believe that if brought to a hearing that the board could demonstrate by a preponderance of evidence that respondent committed the conduct as alleged. I will provide a brief background. The Quartzsite Police Department terminated respondent for not meeting probationary standards. Quartzsite PD also noted in their termination report that respondent may have made traffic stops and citizen contacts based on race. The Quartzsite Police Department submitted statistics to Arizona Post. An analyst was assigned this case and presented the case to the board for charging in February of 2019, and the board initiated in this matter. And specifically, the allegation which was initiated on, which is in my motion, was that between May 2018 and September 2018, Officer Scotty Cayley initiated traffic stops and or citizen contacts based on race. After the board initiated, the analyst assigned to this case acquired additional statistical data. It included traffic stops conducted by other officers who worked in the same area as Officer Cayley and at the same time as him. The analyst reviewed this additional data and believes that the additional statistics is a more realistic sampling of comparing Officer Cayley's work with the other officers. Post staff asked that the board dismiss the complaint in this matter based on that new information.
Thank you. Questions, comments? Was there additional counsel here on this as well?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I believe that counsel Mark Williams is present remotely.
Mr. Williams, you like to make comments, sir?
I'm sorry, maybe Neil Landy. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Who? I'm sorry?
Neil Landine.
Mr. Landine. Any comments, questions from the board? Having none, may I ask for a motion?
Alan Rodwell will make a motion. I move to grant the state's motion for reconsideration and dismiss the February 20th, 2019 complaint against Mr. Scotty J. Cayley.
Chair Fandles, second.
Motion second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Brackel, 18-109.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The parties, post-staff, and respondent offer the attached consent agreement for the board's review and consideration. The respondent is Pedro Molera. He is represented by counsel Mark Williams, who is supposed to be present remotely. I believe that he is. I will continue. The respondent, Mr. Molera, is a former detective with the Nogales Police Department. On June 24, 2016, while off duty, he was arrested for DUI. The parties propose a 12-month suspension beginning June 30, 2018, and ending June 30, 2019. All of that is codified in the attached consent agreement, which is part of your board packet.
Was there somebody from Nogales that wanted to comment? Is that what you said?
I believe Mark Williams, counsel for Mr. Molera.
Mr. Williams, sir, are you present?
Yes, I'm here with my client from my office in Nogales, Pedro Molera. We're in my office, and we can see the board.
Okay, great. Would you like to comment on this at all?
Well, I've had the privilege of knowing Officer Pete Molera for a number of years. I just wanted to point out some good things about him. In 2014, he received the Santa Cruz County Public Safety Officer of the Year Award. And that same year, he had also received an award for saving somebody's life. It was the NPD Life Saving Award. So he's gotten many very good qualities. I live in this community, and I would say that he has a great reputation in the community. What happened in this incident was off-duty, and while it's no excuse, I just want to ask you respectfully, the honorable board members, to please accept the consent agreement decision in order.
Thank you very much. Any questions, comments from the board?
Mr. Chairman, this is Paul Ehler. I have a question for Mr. Brackel. What was the blood alcohol content, and is this disposition consistent with other similar fact-based incidents?
Mr. Ehler, Mark Brackel, the proposed discipline of 12 months under these circumstances is within the range and would be consistent with prior discipline. And as to the percentage of alcohol content, that is not in my in the consent agreement. I would defer to the analyst if he is present and can clarify. Is she here? She's not here. Could ask
Mr. Chairman, it is in the consent agreement on the top of page 2. It says 0.08.
Okay, thank you very much. Anything else, Mr. Ehler, on that?
I think the 08 refers to the charge. I'm not sure it refers to the actual blood alcohol content.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that Kathy Hawes, I was told she's the analyst and she's present remotely. She can clarify and answer that.
Ms. Hawes, are you on the line?
I am. I'm just looking in the file.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this is Paul Ehler. Perhaps Mr. Williams has that information.
I'm looking it up right now. I may have it. You kind of caught me off guard with that. I can look it up, though. I just need a few minutes.
Okay. Does your client remember?
I hate to put him on the spot and try and have him say something that may not be correct. Just a moment. I'm looking for it right now.
Jamie Kelly, I have a question.
Yes.
For clarification, there was no question on the individual's whether he was straightforward with the officers or if there was any integrity issues related to the situation.
Mark Brechtel, I can answer that question. The answer is there are no integrity issues at all in this case.
Thank you, sir.
And this is Mark Williams. I did find the results. There was a scientific examination report done. My client, Mr. Malera's blood was drawn, and it showed that he had 0.093 plus or minus 0.005. So in relation to the 0.08, this was 0.093. That's the analysis of his blood.
Thank you for that, sir. I appreciate it. And confirming this is consistent with what we've done in the past. Mr. Ehler, any other follow-up on that question?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. May I have a motion?
Chair, Mark Downs, I'll make a motion to accept the consent agreement for a 12-month suspension of a peace officer certification beginning on June 30th, 2018 and ending on June 30th, 2019.
Don Bischoff, second.
I have a motion, second. Questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all very much. We're moving on to 19146. I show Mr. Caldwell.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Mr. Caldwell?
Good morning.
Oh, I see
good morning,
you there. Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
This case for final action, the first one of mine, involves former Trooper Huddleston of the Department of Public Safety. On February 19, 2020, the board initiated proceedings against the certification of former Trooper Huddleston. Complaint notices were sent to his address of record via certified and regular mail. The certified mailing was signed for by a person at his residence. Unfortunately, the signature was illegible. I couldn't see who signed for it. And the other notice was not returned to Arizona Post. To date, neither Trooper Huddleston nor anyone representing him have contacted Post to request a hearing. To summarize this case briefly, on January 27, 2019, a relative of Trooper Huddleston, who was hunting at the time, shot and killed a mountain lion without a permit. Trooper Huddleston purchased mountain lion tags after the fact and on two occasions lied to game and fish officers who were investigating the incident. Trooper Huddleston later admitted to his dishonesty and he ultimately faced criminal charges in the matter. Records indicate he pled guilty to the charge of false reporting to law enforcement agencies on February 24, 2020. Sentencing information was not available. However, false reporting is a Class 1 misdemeanor. Based upon the facts of this case, staff recommends that the board revoke peace officer certification. And I'd be glad to answer any questions that y'all might have about this case.
Questions, comments from the board?
Mr. Chair, Ken Hunter, DPS, recruiting myself.
Thank you. No questions. May I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, Chris Pittman, I'll move that we accept the findings of facts and conclusion of law and revoke the peace officer certification for case 19-146.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries, and we're moving into Mr. Caldwell, 19-052.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Billy Caldwell again. This case involves former officer Paul Husky of the Salt River Police Department. The board initiated proceedings against Officer Husky's certification on February 19, 2020. Complaint notices were sent to his address of record via certified mail, regular mail, and email. He acknowledged receiving the complaint notice, and to date, neither he nor anyone representing him have requested a hearing. To summarize, in April 2019, a female reported that between November 2018 and February 2019, she had sexual contact with Officer Husky while he was on duty with the Salt River Police Department on six different occasions. She could not advise the exact dates when they occurred. The PD reviewed information from the complainant, as well as GPS data from Officer Husky's vehicle, and determined one of the incidents occurred on November 10, 2018, while Officer Husky was on duty. Salt River could not corroborate the dates that the other incidents occurred. Officer Husky resigned after he was notified of the IA investigation and before any interview could take place. Post-staff members have researched previous board actions involving allegations of sexual acts while on duty, and those cases usually involve a suspension of certification, absent aggravating factors such as dishonesty or other criminal activity. Based upon the facts of this case, staff recommends that the board suspend peace officer certification for 18 months. If the board decides that a suspension is appropriate, it will be backdated when Officer Husky left Salt River. If this is the case, an 18-month suspension would run from April 18, 2019 until October 18, 2020. If, however, the board decides to make a prospective suspension of certification, in other words, an 18-month suspension starting from today's board meeting date, the suspension would run from June 17, 2020 until December 17, 2021. I'd be glad to answer any questions the board members might have about this case.
Questions? Having none, may I have a motion?
Alan Rondell, Mr. Chair, I make a motion we accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law and impose a sanction of 18-month suspension of peace officer certification beginning today, June 17th, 2020.
Second, Tom Kelly.
Motion and a second. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all very much. We're going to be moving on now to the new cases, 19-233. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair.
How are you?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, good morning. My first case today involves former Page Police Officer Daniel Carbajal. On June 29th of 2019, Officer Carbajal received a phone call from his wife while he was on duty. It was a disturbing call. It was about his 13-year-old son who had possibly committed some sort of sexual acts with a young, very young sibling. He was very distraught. The other, rest of the family was out of town. By the time they got home and he got off duty, it was about 8:30 at night. He confronted his son when he got home. He was obviously upset. He grabbed his son, who was in bed, by the shirt, pulled him out of bed, yelled at him a little bit. Not many words were exchanged at that point. He just got frustrated and threw him back into the bed. Before he did that, though, he did slap him with the back of his open hand. The son sustained a small cut on the lip and some bruising, not really bruising the way I'm reading it, more red, chest clavicle area for where his fist would have been shaking up against his chest when he was shaking his son. The next day, on June 30th, Officer Carbajal reported for duty as normal and immediately advised his supervisor what had happened. Said he was very distressed and gave him the whole story. That same day, Page PD requested the Coconino County Sheriff's Office investigate Officer Carbajal for the assault, as well as look into the incident involving the 13-year-old son. CCSO, Coconino County Sheriff's Office, conducted two parallel investigations on that. Focusing on Officer Carbajal, They did interview on the 30th, Officer Carvajal and his 13-year-old son. Both stories did match up. They interviewed him separately. The criminal case involving Officer Carvajal was submitted to the county attorney in Coconino County. A summons was issued for his appear in court, Officer Carvajal to appear in court, on one felony child abuse charge. Later on, the Page Police Department did sustain policy violations regarding this incident, as well as Officer Carvajal had actually contacted a sergeant and another officer that weren't involved in the investigation, and so they found that he had violated policy going outside that investigation, talking to people that didn't really have anything to do with it. On February 13th of 2020, Mr. Carvajal entered into a deferred prosecution agreement with the Coconino County Adult Probation Department, in which he agreed to complete an anger management class and a parenting class by July 28th of 2020. According to this agreement, once Carvajal successfully completes the two classes, the single count of child abuse, which is under the domestic violence statute, it's a Class 6 felony, will actually be dismissed. The DPA, or the agreement, is not a guilty plea. It's not a sentencing order or conviction. It's instead an agreement that can result in a dismissal of all charges. Mr. Carvajal has not formally admitted to the committing of a criminal offense, and at this time, Rule 109C does not apply as he has not been convicted of a felony. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends the board initiates proceedings. Are there any questions on this?
Yes.
Yeah. So there's obviously three moving parts here at least. So the first about the failure to appear, I think that's explained away pretty easily, and that's a system failure and needs to be fixed. So I'm not really concerned about that. Right? I mean, the bottom line is he can't get mail at home. Mail goes to a mailbox. Mail goes to someplace.
Yeah,
what do you have any explanation?
As I have that on the overview, it was more of an administrative error. Everybody in that town, I left the town out, everybody in that town, the residents, cannot receive mail at their home. So it was mailed to his home address, returned undeliverable, and he never knew the summons came out. A warrant was issued, but it was more of an administrative staff move because he never was notified.
And he responded that immediately. So that's really not an issue for the board's concern.
Not in my opinion.
You would agree. Okay. Because you're recommending initiating proceedings. And so the issue is that a complaint was made, wasn't followed through, an agreement was made to deal with anger management, nothing further, no admission of guilt, correct? I guess what I'm getting at is, what would you hope to accomplish by furthering this other than what I've already read?
In my mind, we have the elements of an assault right now.
Okay.
That's the facts that I substantiate to me, maybe the board taking some sort of initiating. But on the other side of it is he still hasn't fulfilled the agreement, so yeah. By this date in July, we'll know if he has. Because if he doesn't, then it could turn into charges for a felony.
Okay, fair enough.
That's
thank you.
My 2 cents.
Thank you.
It's tough being a parent.
Yes.
Any
other question? Would we be able to table this one until July or August and wait for the proceeding?
Definitely within the purview of the board to do that.
I think that's a good idea.
That's a great idea.
Sure.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I agree. Do you need to make a motion?
Do
you make a motion table? How does that work?
Mark, do they need a motion for that?
Yes, please, with a motion.
All right. Do you have a date for July or
select?
Yeah. I would say make it to August then. Table until August.
I'll just say August meeting. So motion to table this case 19233 until the August meeting of the board.
Rod Bell, second.
Motion, second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We're going to move on to the next. 19036.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This case involves former Cottonwood officer Cody Delafuente. On October 17th and 18th in 2018, Officer Delafuente was off duty when he arrived home and met with his live-in girlfriend, Miss L.M. They became an argument started for lots of different reasons, but escalated into a physical altercation. Delafuente lives in Clarkdale, so Clarkdale PD is the jurisdiction on this. During the latter part of the night of the 17th, De La Fuente began an verbal argument with LM that lasted well into the night and into the next morning. During the argument, LM called 911 from her cell phone requesting assistance, and at one point the 911 call taker called back and De La Fuente answered, advising that there was not a problem. Law enforcement did arrive, and when they got there, De La Fuente told them that he had arrived home to find LM drunk. He said they argued, and at some point during the early morning, LM actually passed out or fell into the wall, where her face hit the wall and then landed on the floor, causing severe facial injuries. De La Fuente told officers and deputies that he did not assault LM and that it was only a verbal argument. Clarkdale PD Sergeant Smith was the primary investigator on this, and when he interviewed both subjects, he noted that he did not smell any alcohol coming from De La Fuente while speaking to him. Ms. LM did corroborate De La Fuente's version of the events and said she had apparently passed out, causing her face to strike the corner of the wall, but she was not assaulted by De La Fuente. When Sergeant Smith interviewed LM, he observed that her face was badly injured, her nose later determined to be broken, and upper lip were swollen, and her eyes were beginning to blacken. Sergeant Smith detected a faint odor of alcohol coming from LM, but said she was not swaying and was not slurring her words. However, her injuries did interfere with her speech somewhat, but because of her swollen lip, but that she did speak clearly and in complete sentences. LM said De La Fuente had nothing to drink of alcohol that night and was on call. She said that she got a little sloppy due to the mixture of drinking wine and some Tylenol and just hit the ground. Sergeant Smith noticed that LM's injuries were not consistent with walking into the wall. LM said that she had called 911 and told the call taker that De La Fuente had beaten her because she was upset at the time and had been drinking. She said De La Fuente had wanted to take her to the hospital, but she refused to go. Sergeant Smith asked her if De La Fuente hit her, and she said no. She ran into the wall. She refused to be transported that night for any further medical treatment. 5 days after this incident, on October 23rd, LM showed up at the Clarkdale Police Department station and advised the officers there that she initially had lied to responding officers and was, in fact, assaulted by Officer De La Fuente that night of the incident. LM told investigators she did not tell the truth during the first interview because she was concerned for her safety. She said she had lied about what occurred when the officers first arrived on October 18th because De La Fuente had told her to, quote-unquote, stick to the story, meaning that he wanted her to lie and tell officers that she was drunk. LM said De La Fuente gave her some vodka and pain medication because she likely had a broken nose, and that for those 5 days preceding after the incident and before she showed up to Clarkdale, he had been giving her somewhat forced prescriptions. She said he would put it in her drink or made her put it in her mouth and watched until she swallowed it, prescriptions that were not her medications, and she thought maybe they were narcotics because they made her sleepy and drowsy. And for about that whole five-day span, she was just in a perpetual state of drowsiness and slept a lot. During the interview at the police station, LM showed the investigators some marks and redness that she said that she got from being drugged across the floor that night. She said that she was choked out a couple of times, maybe several times that night. However, Sergeant Smith did not detect any redness at that point on her neck. They did transport her to a medical facility that day on the 23rd to have the doctors look at her nose and her other injuries. They did determine that she had a broken nose, and that was and she had some other blood tests, which resulted in benzodiazepine, opioids, and marijuana in her system at that point. After interviewing LM, the investigators re-interviewed De La Fuente. He basically repeated the same story. He said there was a physical altercation. He was defending himself, that she had bit him that night, and that she didn't, he didn't think it was a criminal matter that would help her in the judicial system, that she just needed help with her problems. He also showed Sergeant Smith and another officer cell phone photos from that night, of his injuries, and also an audio recording that he made of Miss LM, where she could be heard yelling in the background that, quote unquote, in the ass, you like it in the ass, don't you? Speaking to Dela Fuente, and then Dela Fuente could be heard telling LM to stop hitting him. Dela Fuente was subsequently arrested and booked that day on several felony and misdemeanor counts under the domestic violence statute. Dela Fuente was later indicted on those charges, and on September 4, 2019, he pled guilty to two counts of aggravated assault. Both of those were at Class 6 felonies, and 1 month later, on October 7th, the judge issued an order of judgment and guilt and sentence and reduced those aggravated counts, assault accounts, to Class 1 misdemeanors, still listed as ag assaults. On October 10th of 2019, Cottonwood opened an IA, interviewed Dela Fuente, and immediately sustained all the allegations involving the incident. On October 11th, Dela Fuente resigned. And based on the facts of this case, the staff recommends the board initiate proceedings. I'm going to get a drink of water.
I have a motion.
Paul Taylor, I'll make a motion to initiate proceedings.
Sheriff Daniels, second.
Motion, second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. We're moving down to number 19220. Mr. Deltre.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This final case of mine today involves current Glendale Police Officer Matthew Salyers. Officer Salyers was a Glendale Police Officer on March 6th of 2019 when he and his partner, Bill Johnston, were working as a two-man patrol unit. Johnston was driving. Salyers was the passenger. They observed a male, later identified as Mr. AC, driving a vehicle in the area they were working, high crime area. The officers ran the registration check on the car, not sure why they ran it, but they did, and it showed it was registered to a female. When the officers' patrol unit caught up to the car, AC made a quick turn into a pawn shop parking lot, and in their minds, as if possibly attempting to avoid the officers, and then he backed into a space without leaving the vehicle. After several minutes, the vehicle left the lot and drove onto 59th Avenue where Mr. AC made a turn without signaling, and the officers stopped him. Just prior to contacting AC, both officers activated their body-worn cameras, and the video showed that upon contacting AC, Officer Johnston requested AC's driver's license. AC immediately refused to provide his license or any other form of identification. AC continued to refuse to identify himself to the officers, at which time Officer Johnston informed AC he was under arrest. While AC was seated in the car, Officer Johnston wrote in his report later that he reached into the vehicle's driver's side, Officer Johnston did, and attempted to gain control of AC. However, AC resisted by keeping his hands down near his waistband and refusing to allow the officers to gain control of his arms. Johnston later reported to his sergeant that he could see AC's right hand and arm reach down towards the waistband, towards AC's waistband and the center console area of the car. AC's resistance prompted Officer Salyers to assist Johnston from Salyers' position inside the car on the passenger side. The body-worn camera videos that show that AC resisted arrest by pulling his arms and hands into his body, preventing the officers from gaining control of his arms. The traffic stop was conducted on the street, and the car's engine remained on, and at least one vehicle traveling near the officer's traffic stop can be seen driving by in the video. When Salyers entered the car from the front passenger side, he delivered several closed fist strikes to AC's face. Although neither officer's cameras show the actual strikes, Officer Johnson later told Sergeant Smith, who interviewed them, that he did not see the fist strikes delivered by Salyers, but he thought he could hear them. Johnston authored the criminal report and wrote the criminal report involving AC being the suspect, and wrote that Officer Salyers delivered the fist strikes to AC, and then Salyers reached down to the gear lever to place it into park position, as I guess when he first stopped, he never put it into park. He was just had the foot on the brake. And Sergeant Smith advised Johnston that the video actually appears to show that Salyers put the car into park before delivering the strikes to AC. During his internal interview, Officer Salyers said he saw AC reach toward the car's center console, Sawyers felt he might be reaching for something inside the console, possibly a weapon of some type, so he delivered the fist strikes to AC. He said he also felt the car move a little bit forward, and he thought AC might be attempting to leave. Sawyers told the sergeant that he was aware that Johnson was still outside of the vehicle while struggling with AC, and so Sawyers said that he had thought about he had other equipment on his belt that he could have gone to, but he was unable to reach him. In other words, his taser was on his left side up against the back seat of the passenger car. He couldn't get to that. And his OC spray was holstered behind his weapon. So because of the confines of the vehicle, what he was alluding to is that what prompted him to go to the fist strikes without going to his belt for anything else. Both officers were able to take Mr. AC into custody, and no weapons were found later in search of the car. Before, we do have the video. It's a split-screen, simultaneous video of both body cams. Officer Johnson's on the left. Sawyers, our officer, is on the right. Are there any questions before we see the video? Okay. Anna, would you please?
Hi. Can I see your driver's license, please?
I don't have one.
Okay, do you have ID?
I have an ID.
Can I see that one?
No.
You don't have an audio? Okay, you going to provide me who you are?
I don't have it.
Now you do. Okay, then you'll go to jail.
No, you're not.
Hey, whoa.
I got this recording.
So do I.
I'm recording it. What are you doing?
Stop.
This is private property. What are you doing inside the car?
Stop.
This is private property, man.
Get out of the car now.
I'll give you my fucking ID.
Get out of the car.
Hold on, man.
Get out of the fucking car.
Get
out of the car.
Why are you hitting the car?
Why are you hitting
me on the fucking ground?
Why are you fucking hitting me, man?
There's no reason for this.
Give me your hands.
There is no reason
give
for
me your fucking hands.
There's no reason for you to hit me, man. No, it's not.
It's called resist.
No,
you're
it's
under
not.
Arrest.
I'm not a resisting nothing. Oh. I'm not resisting nothing, man. Fuck. I'm not resisting nothing. You guys are just fucking bullying me. They testified. God damn. This is crazy, man.
We were pulling you over because you failed the signal. When you're contacted for a traffic infraction, you have to provide your info.
Thanks, Dan. AC was transported afterwards to a medical facility where he had where he received 9 stitches for the laceration caused by Officer Sawyer's fist strikes. The Glendale Police Department's executive staff, along with their defensive tactics sergeant, reviewed the Sawyer's actions and was determined that the use of force exceeded Glendale's use of force policy during a resisting arrest incident such as this. Sawyer's was given and served a 40-hour suspension without pay in July of 2019. In addition, Sawyers received 8 hours of remedial response to resistance training. No criminal report was written regarding Officer Sawyers' fist strikes. Be happy to answer any questions.
Yes.
Okay, so just so we're clear, this came to our attention as a result of the news, right? Not as a result of dismissal by the agency. Just help me make sure we're consistent about this. Because the recommendation is agency discretion, if I understand it correctly.
We elected as a staff not to make a recommendation this one.
Okay. I guess my point is that be consistent when we have a use of force that's been handled by a department and it comes to our attention. How have we handled those in the past? Because I can't remember many of those.
Mr. Chairman, Chief Rodbell, we've handled them differently. In some cases, you've initiated on these types of incidents. In other cases, you have deferred to no action agency discretion. And that is one of the reasons why we opted not to give you a recommendation from the board, because, again, we're still trying to determine where the board sits on these types of issues. But, yeah, you are correct. This came to us through the media, and then we're presenting it to you for your direction.
So again, we're inconsistent, which is not a great idea. And of course, all these have different circumstances and the amount of use of force. So none of them are really the same anyway. I just want to make sure we're on solid ground if we say, okay, the agency handles these, they handle these, and we're not interested as a board making sure that we're consistent statewide in terms of use of force. Or do we reinforce the fact that a sustained complaint of excessive use of force has the board's attention and we do something additional? That's our dilemma. Okay. I'd be interested in the conversation, I guess.
Chairman, this is Jamie Kelly.
Yes.
I need to recuse myself from this case, please.
Yes, that's due.
Thank you.
Comments? Discussion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Paul Ehler. I think every one of these cases is going to be fact-specific, but I think it is important for the board to review these carefully because it clearly goes to the, what is it, subsection 812, which deals with conduct that tends to disrupt, diminish, or otherwise jeopardize public trust in law enforcement. And I think whenever there's excessive use of force, that comes into play. So I think we need, I understand the need to want to be consistent, but every one of these fact patterns is going to be different as far as scope and the nature of the incident and how much force was used. So I can see us using, you know, our discretion on each individual case, but I think we ought to look at them very carefully.
Thank you, sir. Additional comments? Having none. Anybody want to see the video again? Was that enough? Okay, then I would ask for a motion.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I make a motion to leave it as agency discretion and take no action.
I have a motion from
a second, but
Keith Kelly and a second from Chris as to no agency discretion. Is that what it was?
Yes, sir.
Any further discussion on that? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Paul Ehler. Opposed.
And the motion carries. Okay, we're going to move into the
Mr. Chairman, can I just make a real quick comment before we move on?
Is that
this is Andy. Sorry.
Hi, Andy.
I think there is going to be a movement at the federal level to require some kind of use of force database to be created, and at least that's what I'm hearing, that would include not only officer to civilian, but civilian back to officer. So I do think this probably merits a larger conversation for us here at the board of how do we want to handle these types of cases? Because I think we are going to get a lot more of them coming forward that are not agency initiated if that does become, in effect, something that the federal government is going to require.
Thank you, Andy. And as chairman, I would agree. I agree with what Paul said. I think every one of these cases have their own facts, their own issues, their own circumstances. But I think the public looks to this board a little more than what a policy matter is with an individual agency. And I think we need to look at these individually. And I think we need to have more discussion on it. I think that's part of what this board's mission is. And it's something that I think we're hearing about a lot nationally right now, so I would agree. I think we as a board need to look at these in the future and discuss them as to individual cases and use of force. So that's my comment, but the motion did carry, and anything else on that? Either comments on this? Okay, we're going to move on. Mr. Jacobs. Good morning, sir. We're on 19130.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the board. First, much to my chagrin, I have to point out a couple of glaring typos that I made on this report, and for that I apologize. But on the first page, at the upper right corner. The case number is wrong. It should be 130. It is correct on all the following pages.
Okay.
And then on page 4, paragraph 10, where I got this date, I have no idea, but in the report it says June 15th. That should actually be May 22nd.
Okay.
With that said, this case involves a former DPS officer, Trooper Swan, who during April of 2019 became the subject of a ROC investigation. ROC is the Register of Contractors. This was done for a report that he was contracting without a license. The ROC completed the investigation. It was submitted to the county attorney's office for prosecution. However, prosecution was declined. It was also notified to the Arizona Department of Public Safety, who initiated an internal investigation into the matter. During the investigation, Trooper Swan was first called and was questioned on whether he had constructed a pool or helped construct a pool for some citizens, and he said so to the affirmative. When asked about what license he used, he said that he had used a license of a Mr. RV. And when he was asked on how they could contact Mr. RV, he reported that Mr. RV had gone out of business. On June 6th, DPS investigators formally noticed their investigation with Trooper Swan, gave him his Garrity warnings, and interviewed him. When he was asked if he was contracting, he said no, that he was actually working as a consultant. However, the investigators had him read the Register of Contractors statutes, and after reading that, he admitted what he had been doing did fit the definition of a contractor. He did maintain, however, that he thought he could act as a consultant for the home builder to build the pool without having a license. He said his job was to, it was actually the home builder that had the, was building the pool, that there are the ones that used Mr. RV's license, and what he was doing was guiding them through the process on what order the work should be done and helping line up contractors to do that work. When questioned about the status of Mr. RV's business, Trooper Swan again said that Mr. RV had gone out of business. The interview was stopped at that time, and the investigator called a Mr. JB, who was a subcontractor on that job and was also the one that reportedly obtained the permission to use Mr. RV's contractor license. When investigators spoke with Mr. JB and asked whether he had or had not informed Trooper Swan that Mr. RV had gone out of business, Mr. JB said he had not given him that information. The investigator, Mr. JB, talked for a few more minutes, and at the end of the conversation, Mr. JB said he did not recall whether he gave that information to Trooper Swan or not. Prior to the investigation concluding, Trooper Swan went to his supervisor's office where he was going to tender his resignation. During that conversation, Trooper Swan became very upset and made verbal threats against the life of, at that time, Deputy Director Heston Silver. Trooper Swan became so upset that he ended up having to go to the hospital. He had suffered an anxiety attack. When later questioned by investigators about the threats that he had made, Trooper Swan reported that he had no memory of making the threats, that he also did not remember going to the hospital or how long he had been in the hospital. Trooper Swan was arrested, and he was booked into the Maricopa County Jail for threatening and intimidating, a Class 1 misdemeanor. An arraignment hearing was scheduled in the West McDowell Justice Court for August 15th of 2019. Excuse me. However, the matter was scratched, citing no complaint filed. On September 15th of 2019, the DPS investigation was completed and sustained allegations that Trooper Swan had contracted without a license and had been dishonest during the investigation regarding the business status of Mr. RV. He was also sustained in the second allegation for threatening and intimidating. On May 22nd of this year, Post staff met with Mr. JB to discuss the conflicting statements that he made during his phone interview with the DPS. Mr. JB said that he did not tell Trooper Swan on a telephone call that Mr. RV had gone out of business. He said they actually spoke about that on a job site. Mr. JB is the one that blows in the concrete in pool construction, and that he was on a job site with his crew when he and Trooper Swan talked about the ROC complaint. He said that Trooper Swan walked away for a short time to go do something, and during that time that Trooper Swan was gone, he began speaking to his crew about another person both RV stands for Robert and a last name, started talking about another Robert and Mr. RC, who had a Pebble Tech business, that Mr. RC was going out of business. And when Trooper Swan returned, he and his crew were talking about Robert going out of business. And it was Mr. JB's opinion that that's where Trooper Swan came to the opinion that Mr. RV had gone out of business. During the interview with investigators, Trooper Swan consistently maintained that he had been informed or was under the impression that Mr. RV had gone out of business. Are there any questions? First, let me post recommend that based on the facts of this case that you initiate proceedings.
Comments, questions?
Mr. Chair, Ken Hunter, recusing myself.
Thank you. May I have a motion?
Sheriff Mark Daniels, make a motion to initiate proceedings.
I'll go second.
Motion second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. And we're going to move on to the next. Mr. Cookrick.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board. On January 6, 2020, former City of Yuma Police Officer Matthew Wowen did not report for his assigned work shift. At approximately 6 a.m., co-workers and his sergeant called and texted him but received no response. At approximately 7 a.m., his sergeant received a text message from Wowen stating, "I slept through my alarm." The sergeant did not hear anything further from Wowen. At about 10:30, the sergeant heard that Wowen was being dispatched to a call for service. The sergeant responded to the call and met Wowen on scene. During the encounter, the sergeant could smell that Wowen was wearing an overwhelming amount of cologne, was chewing gum, and appeared to be trying to maintain distance while speaking. Based on the observations, the sergeant told Wowen to meet back at the station. At the station, the sergeant asked him why he was so late. Wowen said that he had slept through his alarm and did not wake, and when he woke up, he realized that his uniform was in the washer and still needed to be dried. The sergeant asked him if there was any chance of alcohol being in the system. Wowen responded by saying no. While speaking in the office, the sergeant initially did not smell any alcoholic odor coming from Wowen, but after sitting in the office for several minutes, the sergeant could smell a faint odor of alcohol coming from his person. Wowen agreed to submit to a portable breath test, which resulted in a 0.075 blood alcohol content reading. The sergeant indicated that while Wowen was blowing into the device, there was a strong odor of alcohol coming from his breath. Wowen was transported to a medical facility for additional blood alcohol content verification testing. These tests resulted in a 0.074 and a 0.054 BAC reading 15 minutes later. During a post-security administrative interview, Wowen admitted to drinking numerous alcoholic beverages the night of January 5th, 2020, but did not feel that there was still alcohol in his system when he reported to work the next day. On February 2nd, 2020, Wowen submitted his resignation from the Yuma Police Department prior to the completion of the administrative investigation. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends that the board initiate proceedings. and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
No questions. May I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, Chris Pittman, I move that in case 20-018, we initiate proceedings.
Rodville seconds.
Motion second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries. Thank you very much. And moving along, did we have anything for the future? Okay. Then with that, we are adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.